Well, Leanne, let's just start with the question of what is happening here for San Juan Basin Health Department in regards to COVID-19.
Sure, and thank you for the question. Well, for San Juan Basin Public Health, our epidemiology team has been tracking COVID-19 since January of this year. So we have two epidemiologists on staff who started meeting with community partners probably mid to end of January, kind of had the first contacts with agencies that we may be working with if we found ourselves in a outbreak or pandemic, and tracking it in the background for about 6 weeks. End of February, that team came to the leadership in the organization and said that it is time to grow our agency's response to this. And by the end of February, we had made plans to open our Department Operations Center. And we did that March 2nd, which was a Monday. And we have been in emergency operations since Monday, March 2nd. So our team is 29 days without a day off, or 28 days without a day off right now. So I guess I just want really to, impress upon listeners that, there are local epidemiology staff that was tracking this, paying attention and looking for, worldwide and national evidence that it was time to staff up locally. And so when we got together last week in February, we sent everyone home that weekend to read our communicable disease plans, our pandemic plans, our quarantine and isolation plans, and also read our continuity of operations plans in case we had to pull staff out of their other functions. So continuity of operations is just that. If we have the majority of our staff responding to this event, then we also have to look at how do we deliver all the other services that folks are typically relying on. So we did all of that work prior to opening our Department Operations Center on March 2nd. And we thought that we were kind of thinking this through and we're going to be launching things maybe a little bit early so we would have some time to catch up. And it has really felt like a boulder flying down a hill, picking up stuff as it rolls downhill, getting bigger, and we're still running after it.
The Southern U Tribe, having confirmed cases, Fort Lewis College has sent out a press release of a confirmed case. Archuleta is a positive test, and then it's growing every day for La Plata. Is this surprising to you?
Yeah, I mean, we're a little bit behind some other communities in the state. So we were, I think early in getting our preparation together. But, as it turns out, as something grows, it certainly wasn't declared a global pandemic when we started our Department Operations Center. So, and it wasn't a national emergency yet. It wasn't a statewide emergency. So we were not at the tip of the spear for the state of Colorado. But we have been, for the past couple of weeks, really trying to convey to the community that we're operating under the assumption that COVID-19 is present in our community and we have community transmission. We just don't have the testing to confirm that. So we've asked the community to operate under that assumption for some time. So now that we have positive cases and we're, lots of agencies are sending out press releases that they're confirming that they have positive cases, that hasn't been a tremendous trigger point for us as an organization because testing has really been difficult in our community and communities all over the country. So when I said a couple weeks ago or over a month ago, we pulled out our plans and read all of them, they're all predicated on having diagnostic testing. And that kind of defines what your trigger points are. And then that defines how you control disease, contain it. And then it also defines if you can't contain it, how you direct your mitigation efforts. And mitigation efforts are things that we've all come to know as social distancing, right? And all of that, you write those plans under the belief that you will have diagnostic testing. So the real trickiness of this response is that we've lacked diagnostic testing. So we've asked people to operate under the assumption that we have it. Now the test results are coming in. And that may be a surprise to people that are kind of paying attention to this in the background. But certainly for our staff, having test results come in hasn't really changed the message to the community, which is, you know, operate under the assumption that it's here. Practice social distancing. When you leave the house, think of yourself as the person that could be COVID-19 positive and act accordingly. And that's some of the best advice we can give. And we were giving that advice, you know, before we actually had confirmations.
Leanne, when I had spoke with Governor Polis last week, he had said that Colorado was on the ball in one of the top three states in the nation who was requesting testing. And that, do you feel like that same sense that Colorado was on the ball? And how does that affect rural areas like La Plata and Archuleta?
You know, I think we are on the ball. I think as a state, we got on it early. And certainly as a local agency, we got on it early. That said, the choke points in availability of widespread testing are multiple. So we can be on the ball and making all the proper plans and having all the right communications, and it doesn't fix the issues, which were that, you know, there was initially lack of test kits, and there were, you know, supply chain issues with actual swabs. There were supply chain issues with the viral medium that we need for the test kits. There's PPE. So, I've seen this kind of meme floating around that, 2 weeks ago, no one knew what PPE is. Now everyone knows that PPE is personal protective equipment that lots of sectors of workforce that we rely on to be healthy and safe use PPE. So we have PPE supply chain issues. And then, it becomes kind of a judgment call as we're trying to bring in PPE. And in some parts of the country, we have really, really sick people and we need PPE to treat them. Do we use it for testing in other places, right? Like these are global questions, and then they become statewide questions, and then they become local questions. The labs weren't designed to run the number of tests that we're asking the labs to run. So Colorado's lab initially was running, under 100 tests a day. That's expanded up to, I believe it's well over 600 now. That's a lab, running 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at six times the capacity that it initially could. So heroic efforts go into solving these problems. But when you have multiple problems, you can say, yeah, we're really on it. We're really ahead of the curve. And we're all swimming in waters that are difficult right now.
How does living in a rural area, like where some of your counterparts, maybe in Eagle County and Jefferson County and, Denver, certainly, have you spoke with some of them and how they're faring this to how we're doing?
Yeah, I mean, the public health directors, we are in close contact. We're comparing notes from communities because we can get ideas about, what might happen next for us and, what was successful in one community and how do we share that. So that's actually absolutely been a part of this. As a local public health agency, so 4 weeks ago when we moved into our emergency operations response, one of the first things we noticed was that our partners at the state were looking through their plans, maybe with the assumption that Metro would have the initial cases. And that makes sense because the people that work for the state, live in the Metro regions. And we were really looking at this going, but the ski areas and the mountain communities have a lot of travelers. We think we might be first. And, luckily for us, Durango was not a first case for the state of Colorado yet. The first cases in the state of Colorado certainly were in ski areas. And I think everyone kind of woke up to that pretty quickly, which is, it only makes sense that people plan what's, we all work with what's closest to us. So our state partners were planning, it did appear as they were picturing initial cases, in urban areas. And we got mountain town outbreaks, and the added challenges in the mountain towns are staffing up to do widespread testing, if it became an important piece of this, staffing up to do the contact tracing. And I think at some point we'll have to talk a little more detailed about what contact tracing is. And then what are the healthcare limitations, right? So if you get outbreaks in small communities and small communities that are far from urban centers, how quickly do you fill up your, hospital beds and your ICU beds? How quickly do you run out of vents? How much PPE do people have in storage, right? So all of those things really quickly came into play, and the state had to start really working together as a state differently. You know, yeah, 80% of our population probably lives, you know, a stone's throw to Denver compared to where we live. But we had to really look at this as a statewide complex problem.
You know, I'm curious too, from your end, what are some of the biggest humps that you're facing, and what are some of the things that we are doing really well?
Let's start with what we're doing really well.
Because
I do want to talk about, our community is hungry for information. So we thank KSUT for putting together this program and, you know, trying hard to get frequent messaging out about the progression of this global pandemic. So first of all, you know, wanting information, wanting local information, that's an important step for a community. Understanding that social distancing is the thing that we can do to flatten the curve is a huge kudos to our community for getting that, for, you know, learning what it meant, adhering to it, and doing the best we can to, do social distancing. We're doing this by Zoom right now. I think just a couple of weeks ago, this would have been an in-studio interview, right? We are running our emergency operations center as a local public health department remotely over Zoom. We are conferring with all of the partners, you know, whether it's cities, counties, sheriff's office, other agencies. We're doing all this really hard stuff, teleconferencing, right? We're not the only ones that have changed our work habits. There is an entire, you know, for San Juan Basin Health jurisdiction, two counties and four municipalities, where every government went through, you know, their list of employees, sent home as many people as they could, figured out who was working from home. Every business did that. You know, everybody is staying home if it's not essential, right? I think people are getting that. And what are we doing well? We're putting ourselves through some really hard choices, because we know that our individual actions will keep other people safe. And, you know, that's a really interesting way to live your life, right? Like, to wake up, nobody ever asked you to do that before. I mean, we ask people not to speed. We ask people not to drive drunk. It's the same type of thing, but it's that times a million, is that we're basically saying, every time you walk out your door, think about what you're doing and do you need to be doing it. And, you know, when I look out my window, I see that it's happening.
And what feels hard right now? The challenges.
All of it. I mean, it is hard, right? We're community members are doing really hard things, right? We're living in rooms that are smaller, with more family members, sitting around sharing internet, sharing bandwidth, trying to work, trying to do homework. We're not able to reach out to each other the way that we would like to. You know, I see my staff over Zoom. I want to give people a hug, and we can't do that. What was the question?
Challenges. Like what? Challenges. I mean, you just said all of it. You know, it's hard.
Yeah. It is hard. I don't think, and I think, you know, we're social animals, right? We're not designed for this alone time that people are faced with. And we're scared. We're nervous. We have anxiety. We're, you know, kind of stuck at home in economic uncertainty and health uncertainty. So that's hard for people. And, you know, I would just encourage people to really reach out to each other, right? You know, I mean, we have phones, many of us have computers, we have ways to connect. If you don't have really good access to those things, old-fashioned letter writing, you know, I'm going to write letters to my mom. I keep thinking I'm going to do that, but it hasn't happened yet. But, you know, it's like really just relying on habits that are different right now.
We can focus on contact tracing, because I think that's something interesting in a small community of, well, I want to know if he was at North City Market, and I want to know if she was at Albertsons.
Right. Yeah. Now that we're reporting positive cases, I mean, there is a lot of pressure to say, you know, where the positive case lives, exactly what neighborhood, and give a list of places that they visited. And first of all, the transmission, of COVID-19 is reliant on close contact. So walking by someone is probably not how we're going to transmit it, right? It's got to be within closer contact, where we're exchanging droplets or exchanging, you know, material that's left on surfaces. So with that, we have been asking people to operate under the assumption that COVID-19 is in the community and we have community transmission for quite some time. So knowing exactly where someone lives and knowing exactly where they went is not how we're going to break the cycle of transmission. So one of the things is public health. We are in the background investigating communicable disease all the time. This is not new to us for COVID-19. There are other, you know, infections and diseases in our community, like tuberculosis, hepatitis A, sexually transmitted infections, HIV, right? These are all things that we're always working on in the background. And then in the summertime, I think many people know that we have, you know, we have rabies, we have plague, we have hantavirus. So we have that's why we have a pretty robust, you know, communicable disease epidemiology team. What we want is people to know that they come into public health and their rights to privacy will be protected, because if we don't protect people's rights, they won't come in for testing, we won't have diagnostic testing, and we won't be able to direct efforts. So how do you do both? How do you, and actually it's the law, you have to follow the law to protect people's privacy, but it's more than the law. It's simply that you want trusting relationships with your community members so that they continue to come into you for testing, because diagnostic testing is the most important tool in communicable disease. So what we do, rather than put up a billboard which says, you know, Sarah Fowler has this disease and she lives at this address and she likes to go these places, because then Sarah Fowler is never going to come in to see us, right? So what we do instead is we interview anyone that has a positive case, and then we do an epidemiological investigation based on that interview to know who you've had close contact with and who needs quarantine, isolation, monitoring, further instructions for symptom tracking, make sure that they're talking to us on a frequent basis, depending on what type of you know, disease or infection it is, and then have connections to primary care should they need it. So all of that happens for all communicable diseases, including COVID-19.
For people and to understand the difference between isolation and...
So there are some definitions of these terms, and they are kind of muddied right now because we're all following stay at home. Mm-hmm. So if we're staying at home, we're self-quarantining or self-isolating. But the traditional public health definitions of those things are you quarantine when you're not demonstrating symptoms. So if you've been interviewed in an epidemiological interview and we determine that you have potential exposure, you are asked to quarantine and monitor for symptoms and report symptoms back to the person that's interviewed you and is assigned to, you know, your case. If you're displaying symptoms, that's called isolation, and then you can be ordered to isolate, right? And both of these things, generally, we do it through voluntary compliance. And like I said, public health is doing this in the background all the time, but not everyone's paying attention like we are now. Mm-hmm. So generally, people are self-quarantining or self-isolating without a written order, because usually when you're discussing a communicable disease with someone, their first question is, oh my gosh, I hope I didn't get anyone else sick. What can I do to keep other people healthy? And they voluntarily comply with quarantine or isolation. But absolutely, local public health and state health have the ability to order people to quarantine or isolate. It's just not our first choice. And so again, quarantine is while we believe you've had an exposure, we're asking you to quarantine and monitor for symptoms. Isolation is you are displaying symptoms, we're waiting for test results to come back, or we have test results back and it confirms that you have XYZ. And now we're ordering you to isolate until a certain period of time based on the disease that you've been diagnosed with.
Do you guys work closely with the Southern Ute Tribe? How is that relationship? I mean, I know that they're their own sovereign nation, but they're obviously referring to.
Right, the Southern Udinian tribe, as we all know, is a sovereign nation and has all of the things that we're describing here in local public health and state health. They have a tribal arm that is doing these exact same things. There is no obligation that we work together yet, because we have all sat down. And like I said, our staff was meeting with agencies starting in January on this. The relationships are there and the communication has already been built. So we've all acknowledged that, you know, the obligation may not exist, but we're neighbors. The virus doesn't know if I'm on the reservation or if I'm in La Plata County. Mm-hmm. So we have been working together, you know, since January on how are we going to contain in our communities should we get positives. Once it did start to really grow nationwide, we were like, okay, how do we mitigate together? How do we pass on information? And how do we do the best we can to keep all of our constituents safe? So yeah, it's been wonderful to work across two counties, four municipalities, and with our neighbors at the Southern Ute Indian Tribe. We really appreciate the good relationship.
That's awesome. Yeah. You know, personally, I was taking my kids out for a walk, and at the park in town, there were like four families hanging out at a playground, and I wanted to scream. And what are you doing? And that's still, this is our community. And I get having small children and I get being bored and I get that you've been in town for, or inside for 16 days. How can, like, you know, like I felt like a citizen's arrest is what I wanted to do to these families, but how do you get this into people's heads that stop?
Well, I mean, I think KSUT is doing it by doing this show, right? And it's just, you know, echoing the call for each other and reminding people that this is not something that government's going to be able to solve for you or it's going to be solved for you. This is something we're all going to solve together as human beings by saying this is our shared responsibility to keep each other healthy and safe. Now, as we develop more diagnostic testing and we can really, you know, target our disease control and hopefully target our community mitigation, then I suppose governments and healthcare will be solving it for you. But in the meantime, we have to solve it ourselves, right? And it's human to human, one-on-one conversations. I know this is not what any of us planned, right? I'm sure, you know, all of our staff had different things that they wanted to do in March 2020. None of it got done. I'm sure that as we move into the next coming weeks, you know, we're still weeks away from peak for the state of Colorado. All of our healthcare workers, first responders, you know, folks on the front lines are going to be in the exact same position, which it doesn't matter if you had a graduation plans and, you know, an Easter party, weddings, right? I mean, all of these things are on hold. And if other people are making these sacrifices, we can make them too. And it's one conversation at a time until we get there.
I hear a lot on this COVID-19 social media page, Stan Durango or something, that the community members are really trying to help and jump in and support. And I think similar to how do we help the community, how can people help San Juan Basin Public Health?
Well, I think it's like any kind of social movement, right? I mean, I don't know how old everybody is that's listening, but many of us remember when you didn't have to wear a seatbelt and you definitely didn't have to wear one in the back seat, right? And somehow or another, the world changed around you. And if you get in a friend's car and you were the third or fourth person getting in and you sit in the back seat, there is nobody starts the car until everybody has a seatbelt on. That certainly wasn't the case when I was growing up, right? Yet somehow that became just a thing that we all know, and nobody looks around and, you know, like we all know it, right? Until you hear that last seatbelt click in, nobody starts their car. How did that shift happen? We all kind of put social reinforcement on each other until we got to, you know, something that works to keep all of us safe. I think there's other examples of that where we... we share, whether it's social media, whether it's phone calls back and forth, whether it's those handwritten letters that we all have time for now, but somehow we reinforce messages to each other that this is important, mm-hmm. and shifts happen. We've seen this in lots of public health type things where the social pressures become very different you know, now than they were once before.
How many more tests do we have coming here? What does that look like coming in to San Juan Basin? Is there, do you even know?
We don't know. The governor has announced that I think it was 4,500 test kits were making their way out through communities in Colorado. We do not know if we are on that list and if we will be receiving anything from that. What we also know is that's only one step. I think we described that the lack of testing, which really directs our efforts, is, has multiple barriers to getting fixed, right? So there's other things. While those are, you know, we're all focusing on that 4,500 tests that we just heard about going out through the state of Colorado right now, but there's other solutions that people are working on, right? There's new technology, and there's use of labs differently, and there's this whole process of getting testing approved by the FDA and then approved by the CDC and then out to local communities. And we're seeing acceleration of that process, and we're seeing some hints that there may be different types of testing available soon. So I guess my answer to that question is, we don't know. We're working as hard as we can, and we are paying attention to all of the different things that are out there right now, trying to prepare ourselves to pivot to whatever becomes available most quickly so that we can protect the health of this community.
Anything else that we missed or that you want to add or that our listeners should know about, as this is our preliminary introductory story for this COVID-19?
No, I mean, the most important thing is stay at home. And if you have questions about what that means, there is information available on our website at sjbpublichealth.org. There are links to the state website about exactly what stay at home means. We don't think that knowing exactly what it means is the most important detail that people have to have in their heads. The most important detail that they have to have in their heads is thank you for keeping other members of your community safe and healthy. And number two, if you, as you leave your house, think, what if I were the person that was COVID positive? That would give you some guidance as to what you should and should be doing. And that's easier than reading through 11 pages of a public health order.
Leanne Gillon, Executive Director of San Juan Basin Public Health Department, thanks so much for joining us today.